When we take a vow, it sticks with us. It stays with us even when we break it. Yes, perhaps especially when we break it. And any vow worth its salt is going to be really hard not to break. I've said formal vows 3 times, when I got married, when I was ordained, and when my children were dedicated. And I don't remember the words of either vow by heart, but they worked their magic. On breath and voice, the words flew off the page, picking me up and holding me, ushering me into something bigger than the ceremony, far bigger than my name, ushering me into wife, into reverend, into mother. And the ushering sounds like the ancestors whispering without words. They say, "This is where you belong. We believe in you. So surrender all the escape hatches. There is no direction but forward. There is no path but this very one beneath your feet." Over the years, these vows have tossed me about and shaped me like sea glass, humbling my edges and thinning my defenses until light shines through. These are the vows that I consciously chose as an adult. But I imagine that there is one vow that we all have in common. I imagine that every human being's first breath is a vow. And in the moment that we emerge from the womb, that we each take a vow to live here well, to protect Earth so that life can be passed on to future beings. And like all good vows, it is a vow that is really hard not to break. Over the last 12 years, I've been busy with my family life as my children have been growing through their early childhood. They're now 11 and 7, Grace and Charlie. And the joy, as well as the physical and emotional exhaustion, are fading into the stuff of photo albums and scrapbooks. And one of the many things that I'm noticing is that I have more energy now, more time, than I've had in the past decade. And I feel as if my heart is waking up again to the reality of our time, to the fragility of the earth and our place upon it. And I'm also noticing that I've given up a little bit in recent years. I guess I've had to. And I know this isn't true for every mother of young children, but for me to raise babies, I've just had to be completely saturated in hope and beauty, sometimes living with blinders, keeping me focused on all that is loving and positive and moving at a pace no faster than a small child can walk. And even if I had not been raising children during the last 12 years, I have good reasons to give up. I don't have enough money or power or influence to really change anything much. The oil companies will always beat me. I've already bought a Prius and changed my light bulbs. I mean, what more can I do, right? Democracy's too broken, corporations too big, countries too corrupt, human beings too flawed. Of course, I have good reasons to give up, and so do all of you. But lately, I hear another voice. Just as I settle upon this edge of smug complacency, I hear young adult voices from the future. In about 10 years, I imagine my children's young adult voices will swell as they fully understand the magnitude of what's coming their way. It's said that children today, when they're middle-aged, they'll likely experience water shortages and food shortages, and that they'll feel their own plans and dreams tossed about and shaped like sea glass under the weight of it all. These ghosts from the future come to me now in my dreams, and they ask me, "Mama, in the days before it wasn't too late, what did you do to stop this from happening?" And perhaps this question is not just coming from Grace and Charlie. Perhaps it's coming from all future beings, plants, animals, people of the future, asking all of us who have vowed with our birth to protect the earth while it is ours to protect. This is by David White. "Sometimes, if you move carefully through the forest, breathing like the ones in the old stories, you could cross a shimmering bed of dry leaves without a sound. and you come to a place whose only task is to trouble you with tiny but frightening questions. Conceived out of nowhere, but in this place, beginning to lead everywhere. Requests that to stop what you are doing right now, and to stop what you are becoming while you are doing it. Questions that can make or unmake a life. Questions that have patiently waited for you. Questions that have no right to go away. Why me? Could be one of these questions, you know. Why me? Why have I been born into such a broken time where the stakes are so high and the odds are so stacked? And absolutely, we can do that. We can ask this question, why me, and wonder about who could possibly be in charge that would allow all of this to happen. But I don't think there is anyone in charge who would allow this to happen. There is no God up in the sky pouring injustice and money into a few pockets at the expense of just about everyone else on the planet. If there is a God, it's a God who mourns. It's a God who would have her own long list of sorrows to add to today's service. It's a God that feels powerless to see so many vows broken, so much destruction and greed. Perhaps this God is even sitting on the sidelines, muttering through tears, why me? Our sorrow allows us to feel the depth of our love and the sorrowful question, why me? And perhaps there is another question that out of this sorrowful silence can emerge. What's next? We stand holding the web of life, and as we throw it forward to future beings to catch, we have to know what we are throwing. Is the web so weighted down by our sorrow that we can only throw forward our fears and our cynicism? Or are we seeing that this sorrow is just a facet of our story? Our sorrow is not the end of the adventure, but the beginning. There's a family story from my husband's childhood. Whenever his family would get into a bind, and it usually looked like a car broken down by the side of the road, that was the common one, but it could have just been, you know, being lost or whatever, his mother would say when they were in the middle of it, "What an adventure, children!" She had this knack for taking something that was potentially scary and at the very least really frustrating, and spinning it into an adventure so that she could engage her children's sense of courage and curiosity, so that their mishap could be this time of overcoming adversity and even fulfilling their quest. Here's Rilke again. Quiet friend who has come so far, feel how your breathing makes more space around you. Let this darkness be a bell tower, and you the bell. As you ring, what batters you becomes your strength. Move back and forth into the change. What is it like, such intensity of pain? If the drink is bitter, turn yourself to wine. In this uncontainable night, be the mystery at the crossroads of your senses and the meaning discovered there. And if the world has ceased to hear you, say to the silent earth, I flow. To the rushing water, speak, I am. I know that I'm not to blame in all this. None of us are. Sure, we could all get to deeper levels of looking at how we travel, how we recycle and we waste less, how we invest in sustainable companies and divest our money from destructive ones. How we support local agriculture, all of these things, just is simply what it means to live a life of integrity in the 21st century. But I did not poison the Gulf of Mexico. I did not secretly buy out Congress and block affordable alternative energy resources from getting to the people and then insist that the people want nothing but fossil fuel energy. I did not do that. I do not covet the pipelines, and I do not lust after the heart of the Arctic Ocean. I do not put the heat of 400,000 Hiroshima bombs into the atmosphere every day. This is the oil company's mess and shame. You are not to blame. It is clearly someone else's mess, but here's the thing, it just doesn't matter a whole lot right now. They won't stop using the earth because it's a drug that they're hooked on. And it's a drug that is basically freely available to them, and we're all strangely mixed up in it. Someone recently told me about how her son just got out of rehab after being addicted to crack cocaine. And in the phase just before he stopped using, I don't know how long this phase was for him, but she would say to him, "I want to help you, but if you use drugs, you are not welcome in my house. However, if you want to get sober and return to life, I will do absolutely anything for you." And she said that it was the hardest thing that she had ever done to look into the eyes of her own son and to draw the line and say, this must stop. Not knowing if it would. That she would stand on the side of love and watch her son spiraling into destruction and risk that he could spiral even into death. And she could only request that he come back to her, that he choose to live, but she could not make him come. And she would not take one step to join him in his destruction. And perhaps this is how we need to be with the oil companies, to extricate ourselves from feeding their addiction as much as we possibly can. And perhaps this is also what God is doing. But all of God is looking out at all of humanity, at all of us, knowing that we have the capacity to figure it out, to work together, to honor our vows. But like the mother watching her addicted son, God can only request that we come back. God cannot make us come, and she will not take one step to join us in the destruction. God can only stand on the side of love and invite us to join in the fight to live well. My guess is that when you hear the word sin, I bet most of us have this, you know, this understanding of what that word means that we may have been told from another tradition. And I've made up a definition for today, and I may change my mind about it tomorrow. But I'm going to say today that a sin is when we have fallen away from what the heart of our heart knows to be true. And this is what's tricky about this definition, is because we can't just seek some external force in a sacred text or in a spiritual leader to tell us what is in the heart of your heart and what is true. When a sin happens, it is a very intimate thing with this definition. It is a brokenness that runs through the core of your being, breaking one part of you from another. And if you're lucky, you can feel that happen. Because you know the terrain of your own heart so well that you can pick up the pieces and you can reforge your own wholeness. Systemic sin is a term that you may not have heard before. It's a theological term, and it's used to talk about when a group, when an entire system, a family, a community, a company, a government, a culture, falls away from what the heart of our own heart knows is true. And I want to jump back onto that magic carpet that we took the kids on earlier and go back into the past when there was this systemic sin on a national level, this strange codependent relationship among corporations, consumers, greed, and shattered vows everywhere. And we could go lots of places with this, but we could start by just going back a few decades to see how unthinkable it was to question the power of the tobacco industry, how unthinkable it was for this question, for this industry to be questioned, much less have its presence heavily regulated in Congress, in the media, and in stores even. But let's go back further to when the economy was completely dependent upon slavery. This, I think, is a better analogy. How the American economy was largely dependent on the goods that came from southern plantations and the forced unpaid labor that kept the relatively new American economy buoyant. And it was moral arguments from pulpits, not unlike this one, and creative protest and the Civil War, of course, and these seemingly monolithic powers went from brokenness to wholeness. And it wasn't easy. When slaves were emancipated, slavery was abolished, there was this price to pay, and not just among slaveholders, but everyone who benefited from slavery, which was basically everyone except slaves, of course. And after abolition, there was an economic collapse. Across America and Europe, the economy and culture had to be recreated, reconstructed, and it was. I see that we are at the end of the industrial age, maybe even in the death throes, and that we are being reborn into an age that values community vitality over individual wealth, because we have taken this individual wealth thing as far as it can go. I feel that we are on a cresting wave. And I'm not so naive to think that there won't be a price to pay for the damage that has been done for decades and maybe even centuries to come. But I also see that the monolithic Exxon has yielded to consumer pressure. Exxon has completely stopped arguing against the validity of climate change and is now advocating for a carbon tax. It's right on their website. Public pressure is beginning to bring them toward the brink where they will be able to choose sobriety. And they can. This has been done many times before. As a society, we have fallen away from what the heart of our heart knows to be true. And the brokenness runs through the core of our collective being. We are feeling it happen, and we are learning to know the terrain of our collective heart so that, well, we can well address it and we can reforge our wholeness. This isn't going to be one of those sermons that ends with me giving you suggestions about what to do, because I have no idea what you are capable of, and I would hate for my imagination to limit yours. I only know about me. I know that as a minister, I can preach sermons like this, of course. And as a mom, I can teach my children how to fall in love with the earth, about how to ask for help from neighbors, how to meet and speak directly from their congressional representatives, to remember who we are as citizens and not as consumers, how to host potlucks and create partnerships, how to create this faith community that reminds us of our humanity, of a vow that we took with our first breath. Because when we are alone, we can all too easily forget, becoming uncomfortably comfortable with our powerlessness and our brokenness. A healthy community dares to call us back to who we say we are so that we can reforge our wholeness. Mama, in the days before it was too late, what did you do to stop this from happening? And as I am grappling with this question that I hear coming toward me from the future, I ask myself, who do I want to be in these times? Someone who dances on the edge of the world? Someone who rages and grieves for what is lost, for the damage already done. Someone who stands on the side of love and requests that the oil companies turn away from the brink. Someone who rests in the beauty of the earth. Yes. Yes to all of it. For it is not incumbent upon me to complete the task, but neither am I free to abandon it. And the ancestors whisper on the wind, and without words they say, this is where you belong. We believe in you. So surrender all of the escape hatches. There is no direction but forward. There is no path but the one right below your feet. And let us take the first step by keeping silence together. This is a song that I sing to my kids a lot, and I'd like you to imagine that this is a song being sung by God to all beings throughout space and time. I'll walk in the rain by your side. I'll cling to the warmth of your tiny hand. I'll do anything to help you understand. I love you more than anybody can. And the wind will whisper your name to me. Little birds will sing along in time. All the leaves will bow down when you walk by. And morning bells will chime. I'll be there when you're feeling down, to kiss away the tears that you cry. Oh, and I'll share with you all the happiness that I've found, a reflection of the love in your eyes. And I'll sing you the song of the rainbow. Whisper all the joy that is mine. All the leaves will bow down when you walk by. And morning